So connected to our Unitarian Universalist seven principles, which I know at least on the first of every month you hear all about, are the six sources of our faith. And the fourth source includes Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbor as ourselves. At the end of September of this month, the Jewish New Year begins, Rosh Hashanah, the day when the world was born, the day heaven gives birth to the earth. This day is a reminder of the continual renewal of life. In synagogue services, it's common for the story of Hagar and Ishmael to be read on the first night. Many complicated events lead up to this story, but the important part for today is that a woman, Hagar, and her son Ishmael are banished from the home and community that they've known for forever. They're given bread and water and told, "Go, take your leave of this place and do not return." They wander in the wilderness of the desert, a dry, parched place. Soon all their water is gone. There are no homes, no farms, nothing nearby. Hagar picks up her precious child and places him in the shade of a bush. She steps away, turns her head so that he cannot see her, and she weeps, sure that death is upon them. Her eyes filled with tears, an angel hears the cries of the son in the bush and opens Hagar's eyes. There before her was a well. She filled up her water skin and gave her son a drink. Hagar doesn't know when the well might run dry or how long they were to be spending in the wilderness, but she gives the drink to her son. She learns from her conversation with God's angel that her son Ishmael shall be a great man and have an important legacy. Through speaking with God, life was renewed for a mother and her child. The story of Hagar and Ishmael was launched into a far-reaching future. While once we might look at Hagar's actions like seeing the hopes of our own children infused in sacred water, we wish by some divine intervention that hopes will be granted and the promise of many descendants will be fulfilled. The potential of Ishmael's survival in this story means life at the border of relief and despair. Will life be suffering for our children, or will they have it easier? I will admit to you, I find my own complicity in the things that perpetuate and affirm our climate's destruction rather overwhelming. My spirit, my conscience, is uneasy when I dwell with it, even when thinking and preparing for this service. And if I would say what I would need first, it wouldn't be advice necessarily about what I could do as an individual to deal with my own behaviors, but it would be to be able to sit with others in this grief. So will you sit with me a moment? There's the big, broad grief. This is fear's friend, I find, that according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, our planet has about 11 years now or less before we're not able to undo our mistakes. We are, in a word, failing. In just 11 years, we will have to reduce our CO2 emissions by 50% or more in order to prevent a chain reaction of events that will be then beyond human control. The course of the most severe effects of the warming of the Earth will take place. Rising tides and flooding, extermination of species, wildfire, droughts. These are things that we've already begun to experience and notice. These are the mild effects. And yet those with the power to change our economic and political systems that rely upon the forces that are destroying our civilization, they often deny the existence of climate change, or more often are fixed upon the use of systems that got us to this point and are killing us. This is all before we get to the issue of equity, the grief of inequality, the ways in which people in poor countries have been feeling the effects well before we started to wake up to them here in an industrialized or wealthy nation, and the ways in which communities of color and marginalized communities in the United States are disproportionately affected by our current effects of climate change. Racism, the exploitation of communities of color, indigenous communities, and the exploitation of our planet have been perpetuated by the same dominant forces and entities. Now, this might sound really out there, too alarmist maybe for worship. The wrong thing from a pulpit or a minister that promises optimism and smiles often about the human condition. But it's true, and our own leaders have shared with me how effects have been felt locally in Santa Clarita Valley, and how dominant forces of industry and politics have favored expansion of business over solutions we know we have before us or conservation efforts. Susie and Lynn from our social and environmental justice teams and other leaders spoke with me at length about the effects of environmental injustice and corporate greed here locally, effects on communities near the Chiquita Canyon landfill, the effects in our natural resources like the Santa Clarita River, water supply, and our native trees and wildlife. Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old I spoke of during our Time for All Ages, her words to world leaders are worth repeating. You may have heard them already. Our house is on fire. We are facing a disaster of unspoken suffering for enormous amounts of people. Either we choose to go on as a civilization or we don't. There are no gray areas when it comes to survival. Adults keep saying we owe it to the young people to give them hope. But I don't want your hope, Greta says. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to act like your house is on fire because it is. I agree with Greta that saying to our children we owe it to young people to give them hope is not an appropriate response any longer. I think we have a responsibility, however, to listen to the hopes of our children in our midst and acknowledge these hopes and wishes alongside our own fear and shame and grief about planetary crisis. From this deep well, we may act with urgency, preparing to adapt what is truly a paradigm shift, no matter what, as a global society, we choose to do or to ignore. Reverend Peggy Clark has been leading an effort of Unitarian Universalists participating in the global climate strike. And I've learned from her the following. We need to have the courage to let our hearts break, to face into our terrifying reality, to feel our vulnerability in our bodies and our overwhelming sadness at what is lost. We pretend this isn't happening, that people are telling us the stories, they're exaggerating, or they aren't concerned with things that really matter. But I think mostly this is a layer of protection from grief. Our situation is real, and if we're going to survive, we need to feel it. So I've handed you out some special paper. It's thin. And I'd love for you to just take a moment during this service now to share with your neighbor a fear or a feeling that comes to mind, a reality or place where your own heart is breaking. And then write those fears down on the piece of paper. So I'll give you a couple moments to share with the person next to you. Perhaps they're behind or in front of you. Make sure that everyone is included in this time. And then write down one or two of those fears on the piece of special paper before you. Now, in a ritual of water communion, I invite you, as you are willing and able, to return to our bowl of joys and sorrows. Allow your climate grief, your heart's breaking, to mingle with the hopes of our children. You may hand your paper to the person you were talking with or come up yourself. And if you would prefer that I drop it into the bowl for you, you may raise your hand and I'll come and get it. As you let the paper enter the water and disintegrate. Allow yourself to feel your anxiety or overwhelm mingle with the hopes of our children for their futures, the dreams that we so wish to come true, the futures we wish to protect. A key idea of the high holy days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is teshuvah, translated as turning, return, repentance. It's a circular motion. Pain returning to joy. Heartbreak returning to hope and back to heartbreak and back to joy. Knowing that in this cycle, if your well runs dry, you are not alone. Hear these words by Jan Richardson. Pondering the questions that lie at the bottom of a dry well offers a journey of its own. What I know is this: to find answers, we have to pay attention to the dryness. This is a desert place. As uncomfortable as it may be, there is no substitute for these desert places in the spiritual life. They offer a wisdom we cannot get any other way. When the well goes dry, listen. Sit by it, your ear pressed to its rim. Hear the empty and the hollow of it. Let be, let be. When finally you hear your breath echo back to you, let this sound be your first prayer. Where there is breath, there is water somewhere. In my conversation with Lynn Plambeck, she mentioned to me that she copes by the approach of non-attachment to the goal. You have to do the right next thing. We accept that the suffering and grief we feel is real. We know that the wilderness journey of climate destruction, the path we're on, does have alternatives and possibilities. We know we must repattern ourselves so that our children may survive, drink clean water, swim in clear oceans, and live into their hopes. What is our next right thing? Together, we can enhance efforts that have already begun. Even some that have had positive results, like the planting of 4 billion trees in Ethiopia, the declaration of climate emergencies in major cities, the fact that Costa Rica will be fossil fuel free in less than 2 years. And even though the United States pulled out of the Paris Agreement on greenhouse gas emissions, more than 100 cities and counties across the country are transitioning to clean energy. Reverend Marjorie Bowens Wheatley is a UU minister and justice warrior ancestor of many of my peers who grew up doing anti-racist youth organizing and Unitarian Universalism as teenagers. She writes about Hagar's story and what we need to do for our children's future. Some say that the angel appearing at Hagar's side was the voice of God. Others say that it was the still small voice within. I like to say, Reverend Bowens Wheatley says, that it was love's call, answering her to reflect not only on her dilemma, but on who she was and what she was doing with her life. Love calls out to us as well, asking us to remember who we are, that we are spiritual beings connected to something larger and more trustworthy than ourselves. an angel appeared at Hagar's side and asked, "Where are you coming from and where are you going?" Well, the youth of the global climate justice movement know where their parents have been and are asking adults to join with them where they are going. On Friday, I will be going to downtown Los Angeles as part of the global climate strike to build communal resistance led by our young people to challenge the business and political forces that are trying to squash concerns over the Earth's decline. Susie and Lynn and our social and environmental justice team members have reminded me that they are also going to Ojai to take their voices to the streets there. And if you cannot join us in either of those places, you can take to the internet and your phone to let the leaders know that you will not sit idly by while this crisis continues. Together, we can let them know that we have the power to propel the shift toward the end of fossil fuels, the saving of our civilization, and treat this like the emergency it is. May it be so. Amen. And I hope to see you or connect with you on Facebook on Friday. Thank you.